providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. I am joined by Mike Larson, editor of the Safe Money Report. You can also follow Mike on Twitter at RealMikeLarson. Now, Mike, I spent the first part of this show focused a bit more on the resource sector and some of the precious metals moves. I want to take a step back now and just recap what's going on in the broad markets. The overall financial sector, there does seem to be a bit of a battle right now between the bond market and the stock market. The yields keep on moving higher, and a lot of the bears are saying, well, the markets aren't going to be able to withstand these higher yields, and that's going to cause a big correction. But yet, you look at U.S. equity markets, and there's a bit more of a divergence now with tech selling off. But overall, these markets are still at least close to, if not at, all-time highs in many regards. And now we're actually seeing the banking sector start to take a lead. What's your summary and overall thoughts on the standoff, let's call it, between the bond market and the stock market? And the fact of the matter is that there still seems to be a lot of liquidity in the system, and that continues to support markets.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, when I look at the state of markets right here, especially this kind of this bond versus stock standoff, like you mentioned, I think of those old Western movies where you've got, you know, the bad guy and the good guy sort of standing in a dusty field somewhere and the tumbleweeds are rolling by. And, you know, you got that music in the background and there people are staring at each other and they got their hands on their holsters, but nobody's shooting at it. It's like the, you know, the calm before the storm, whatever you want to call it. And I think that's what we're seeing here in the bond versus stock arena. You have the bond market, which has obviously been selling off and continuing to sell off with prices falling and yields rising. You know, that's been the trend for many weeks and even a few months now. And what we've seen from the Fed is really no shift in messaging. Jay Powell, in my opinion, has missed the opportunity beginning in February and early March in his congressional testimony and then obviously in the most recent Fed meeting to sort of shift the messaging. I think, you know, if you go back to 2013, the bond market had the taper tantrum. That was when Ben Bernanke suggested, you know, maybe we're going to dial back QE and raise rates a little bit sooner than the market, than Wall Street was expecting. And what happened is bond prices plunged, interest rates surged, and stocks really started to struggle. You know, that was a taper tantrum, and the Fed tried to backtrack, and, you know, Bernanke settled things down after a few months, and the market was again off to the races. What you have now is what I would almost call a reverse taper tantrum, where the Fed, what the bond market has wanted to hear is not somebody from the Fed coming in every day and saying, we're going to keep the pedal to the metal full bore. We want to boost employment. We want to boost the economy. We don't care about inflation. We don't care about financial stability, bubble risk, whatever you want to call it. We're just going to keep pushing. That's what the Fed's been doing in its messaging. And, you know, that worked. The bond market played along up until February and March. Now the bond market, I think, wants to hear something different. It wants to hear, hey, you know what? If things get better, we're still going to be the cops on the beat. We're still going to be concerned about inflation and do the right things to keep it from getting out of control. And that simple messaging shift would, in my opinion, prevent a lot of the carnage that we're seeing in bonds. But because the Fed isn't doing it, you're getting this reverse taper tantrum. In 2013, Bernanke set off a bond market sell-off by suggesting easing would be removed too early in Wall Street's view. Now, Powell is trying to do the opposite, saying the opposite, I mean, and he's having the same effect. He's trying to say, we're not going to remove easing. And what's the bond market doing? It's selling off anyway because it wants more, you know, it wants some sort of assurance that the Fed will dial this back when it needs to. So in any event, that's where you're at. You have seen so far these rising interest rates have generally caused rotation behind the scenes as opposed to a sell-off in everything. You're seeing, as you noted, money coming out of technology, out of those FANG names that were so popular before, and rotating into things like transports, into financials, into industrials, and other cyclical-type sectors. The problem is, rates are going to get to a point, they're either going to move fast enough, far enough, and for long enough, however you want to characterize it, that it starts to be a problem for all assets. You start to see rates hit a point that it's not just money rotating out of one sector and into another, it's money rotating out of the stock market entirely into more competitive bonds or into cash as yields go up. So that's where we're kind of at. We haven't seen the impact of that broadly. We haven't seen us hit a real pain point. But I think given the Fed's, you know, sort of fumbling of the message, in my opinion, I don't think we're, you know, we could be not too far off from that. So you do have to be aware of that. You have to be cognizant of that risk. But you don't want to, you know, get too far ahead of yourselves. And in the meantime, you want to try and make hay while the sun shines, in my opinion.
So it still really does come down to the Fed actually doing more. A lot of people, a lot of markets want the Fed to do more, but they are still really sticking to their general strategy and policy. You made that comment there at the end, though, Mike, is that as much as you might want to think that these higher rates could cause a big collapse, or we're waiting for some sort of a Fed move to validate some of these higher moves, you don't want to just exit these markets because then you'd be missing out on some gains. So what are you doing within some of your portfolios to still take advantage of sectors that are running?
So what we've been doing for the last several months is trying to dial down exposure to those vulnerable type assets and vulnerable sectors, things like treasury bonds and some of the more higher yield type names that don't have economic sensitivity, and dial up our exposure to things that still have nice yields, that still have great Weiss ratings, but that are more economically sensitive, a little more aggressive. In practice, that means selling down exposure to things like consumer staples and, adding a few growthier type names, a 3M, for example, or a Texas Instruments, those kinds of companies. So that's what we've been doing. And I think that's, as long as we're in this money flood environment, we have trillions of stimulus being thrown at the markets, you have trillions of dollars of monetary stimulus and easy promises of easy money forever coming from the Fed. Those are the types of things that again, you can concentrate on, you can profit from, even though we all have to acknowledge the long-term consequences this is going to have. As long as we're in this environment, as long as there's so much money being thrown at the market, again, your best bet is to try and capitalize on that and just, be cognizant of the risk it will ultimately create, but don't jump the gun and assume that, Wall Street's going to care about that today, tomorrow, next week, next month, even though it's probably going to care about this in a year or two.
Okay, so don't try to get too ahead of yourself, right? Still take note of where the money is rotating. What about some of the economic data that's going to be coming up that is obviously going to be skewed, especially the year-over-year numbers, whether it's inflation or GDP or really any of the economic data? It's obviously going to be better than this year compared to last year. Is any of it going to be relevant for the markets?
Sure. I mean, we have such a sharp short-term decline in all of the numbers as we rolled into February, March, April of last year. And we've had a very sharp, very strong rebound in many of those numbers, in the last few months. And again, that just points to the nature of all this money being thrown in the economy and the impact it's having on spending and investment and the markets themselves. I think the answer truly for the longer term is somewhere in the middle. I think just like we freaked out and had this huge decline last year, and then we've had sort of a reverse freakout in recent months and seen such an increase. People know that the numbers are going to be extreme in the up direction, just like they were extreme in the down direction last year. So people will take that with a grain of salt. But everybody's trying to suss out what's going to happen as this vaccination process spreads, which it is now, and we get to the point where this pandemic, the inoculations get to a point where people are willing to get on that cruise, willing and able to get on that cruise ship or that airplane, or eat in that restaurant and so on. And we regain a lot of those service sector jobs that were lost. As far as what it means for inflation, I think it's very interesting what's going on in the markets. The markets are pricing in, you look at a lot of these indicators in the bond market, for example, are pricing in a lot of inflation relative to history in the next year or two or three. What's interesting is if you look at the long distance sort of outlook, once we wash through all this stimulus, we wash through the COVID rebound and so on, is that the bond market, these market-based indicators pretty much go back to normal, the sort of blahflation or disinflation or whatever you want to call it that we had before anybody ever heard of COVID. So again, I don't think, the markets are certainly not pricing in, and I'm certainly not expecting a 1970s style ramp up in inflation just because, so much has changed in society with unions, with technology, demographics and all those things that gave us that environment in the 70s don't exist today, in my opinion. So I think ultimately we're going to go back to that blahflation or disinflation environment. But in the meantime, the market's clearly right that over the next year or two, all this stimulus being thrown at the economy and so on is having an impact, and it's going to continue to have an impact.
Yeah, fair enough. That little sugar high boost, right? When everybody can finally get out and start spending some of that money, I think whether they have it or not, people are going to go out and start spending. I can't wait for stuff to open up. And a lot of the people I'm talking to down in the U.S., they are already going on trips or at least planning some trips. Mike, big picture here when it comes to the dollar as well. The dollar has bounced, but it's still in the low 90s, just above 92 as we are recording this, and a lot of that upward momentum has dissipated. Is the dollar important in the markets or for a contextual reference for investors?
I think the big issue for markets right now is interest rates, and that's probably going to remain the case for a while. The dollar, you know, it would take disorderly moves, a real sort of strong rebound, I think, that would coincide with some higher volatility potentially. But I think the dollar isn't the locus of the market's focus right now, isn't it? At the center of everything's attention. It really goes back to interest rates. So, I mean, of course, depending on what the Fed does, if the Fed were to raise earlier than expected, that would, or all else being equal, tend to support the dollar. But, you know, we're not really seeing the Fed certainly talking about that. And even in the rate markets, they're not really pricing in increases, at least for many, many, you know, quarters from this point out. So we'll have to see. But I think, you know, again, interest rates are the story. They're probably going to continue to be the story for the market. It's just a question of watching to see if they get to a point that the spillover impact from, you know, losses in the bond market starts to be a bigger problem for the stock market as well.
Does it all also come back to tech? If tech continues to fade, if higher interest rates hurt high-flying tech stocks, could that then impact a broader range of investors?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you think about, you know, tech in general and, you know, specific parts of tech in a more detailed fashion, I mean, technology, the big FANG names, obviously, garnered huge market caps, became a big part of the S&P overall. But a lot of the you know, speculative type activity has also been in offshoots of tech. It's been in these EV type stocks. It's been in these, you know, other sort of spinoffs and subsectors of tech. If interest rates continue to rise and you lose even big tech, or even big tech has decent sized losses, what do you think the losses are going to be for some of these high flying SPACs, these EV companies, these more speculative IPOs and so on? The losses are going to be of a much greater magnitude. So that's what we really have to watch out for. I mean, that's where a lot of money's been raised. That's where a lot of speculative hot money flows have gone to. And so, you know, that's that would be a significant challenge for the broader averages if you did, in fact, see that sort of, you know, speculative fervor die off because money just got too expensive.
All right, final quick question regarding commodities. We've seen oil. Oil had actually kind of a rough week this week, but it is still over $60 a barrel. And we also have seen a little bit of a pullback in base metals, but copper's still over $4 a pound. How important is it to also watch commodities and the general melt-up in price that we've seen all due, I think, to potential infrastructure plan, but also this reopening trade?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The moves, I mean, if we think the moves in stocks generally have been pretty powerful, the moves in commodities in some cases have been even more so. I mean, you know, you mentioned copper. You could talk about things like lumber where the move has just been off the charts. Crazy. You know, we do want to keep an eye on that part of the market just to see, you know, you would, all else being equal, you'd expect at some point higher rates to impact that. But again, if the driver of higher rates is, as you say, a lot of money being thrown at real projects, bridges, roads, you know, all kinds of, you know, infrastructure type thing, then that's going to help support demand. So you have both a real economy impact on commodities, which is positive, and you have a financial impact, market impact from interest rates. So it's a little bit of a push and pull or tug of war right now. But I think ultimately the environment for economically sensitive commodities is still strong and is likely to remain strong for the next year or two. So I certainly wouldn't be bailing on any of those, you know, but again, you've made a lot of money in a pretty short period of time. So there's nothing wrong with taking profits if you're in that position to do so.
Exactly. All right, Mike, we're wrapping it up there. It's great having you on the show. Thank you for wrapping up what I think was a pretty interesting weekend show, trying to summarize the moves that we are seeing in a much more big picture sense, because quite frankly, trying to pick tops, pick bottoms, that's a tough game to play, but understanding the trends and what is driving these trends is crucial. Hey, everybody listening, I really appreciate you tuning in on this weekend show. I also appreciate all the emails I've been getting. Please keep those emails coming, fleck@kereport.com. And especially let me know what you think of a number of the companies that I am bringing on the show, either for updates or for introductions. I garner a lot from all of your feedback. Everybody, Mike, you as well. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you. You too.